Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking how we build meaningful customer relationships. And I'm so excited to introduce you to my new friend, Shelby. Shelby, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alyssa. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So longtime listeners will know we open up with one question. What is your hot take?
Well, I don't think people are being taught critical thinking anymore in school, and it's showing up in the workplace.
I wish I could say that that's a hot take, but I 100% agree with you. Like, the number of times where I have to look at someone and be like, are you good? Like, is everything going on up there? Unfortunately, no, you're right. And it is one of my biggest pet peeves as a leader who's been in kind of an entrepreneurship role, right? I've had to figure everything out for myself.
Yeah.
And when people aren't willing to do that, I'm always like, come on, just figure it out. Have some curiosity, right?
Well, and I don't think it's just that they aren't willing to figure it out themselves. I don't think they know that they need to figure out something themselves. I feel like, and this is not to, disparage, academics or get into a political conversation. But I feel like with all the standardized testing and the teaching that's happening, and I have a daughter who just went through the schooling process, they're taught to answer questions, like be order takers and rote memorization, that sort of thing. There's no real critical thinking. So when someone today is asked a question, they don't want to think about it. They don't want to understand meaning behind it. They just want to deliver on that immediate request, right? That's what I'm seeing.
And I don't think it's going to get better, unfortunately, because I even find myself, like, I consider myself a critical thinker, right?
Yep.
But I also love AI and generative AI and ChatGPT. Like, I'm not going to lie. I love it. I open it every day. It helps me think clearer. But it also can very much be a crutch if I don't want to think and I just want to be like, let me give you a bunch of stream of consciousness. Now you turn it into something thoughtful.
So it's interesting. This is where it becomes a hot take, because your perspective on AI and mine are actually different here, because I think AI will actually open up the ability for essentially give people time to feel more comfortable, to be more critical thinkers. And I say this because right now, some of the excuses I hear, I don't have time, it's just a bunch of busy work people are trying to churn out. So if we can eliminate those excuses and then coach our teams to be, more curious and ask more questions and think about, not only the current scenario, but other scenarios they've dealt with, and not have to worry about all that busy work because it's being done, with the agents that they've built, I think there's a big opportunity there.
I would agree with that. I do think, I worry, I guess, that people have unrealistic expectations about how much it's going to change their lives, right? If you don't understand that AI is meant to help you do the busy work so you can do the real work, and you're just using it as an avatar or replacement for you and all of your thinking. Because I don't know about you, but I've seen those posts on LinkedIn where it's very clear. They just write a LinkedIn post about insert hot topic for engagement. Make sure you include a call to action. Don't forget to comment for, whatever workbook, right? Like, we've seen those posts, and those are clearly people who are just doing the bare minimum and not using AI intelligently or critically, right?
Right.
I do think
let's
automate the busy work. I'm all for that. But also, I don't want it to be like a shortcut or a crutch for people to just spew nothingness into the world.
No, that is 100% fair. And yes, I have seen those. And let's not get into the M-dash conversation, although I'm a huge fan of M-dashes.
I will die on the M-dash hill. M-dash for life. It is a perfect form of punctuation. You will not take this from me.
Same. That and alliterations. Those are my things.
Yes.
Which we don't see that coming out of AI very much. But anyway, I agree. And I've seen the crutches. I've seen some output, not only just on LinkedIn, I've seen work that's output. And here's the challenge with that. Let's, background, is customer success. And you pop something into ChatGPT. I need to write this email for this client, and I want to give them three insights that are coming from this report, for example. ChatGPT writes the email, they shoot it off. It's great email, insights were perfect. Get a call from the customer. Questions. They can't answer the questions.
Right.
That is a problem.
Right. When you set aside the human to human relationship and it becomes robot to human, or worse, sometimes robot to
Right.
robot, where I'm just sending you AI generated responses and you're responding with AI generated responses.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where I'm saying we as leaders need to coach our teams. That is a perfect example to use AI to get that, you know, make your job faster, scale your business because you can get, you know, more output, your throughput's higher. But you need to take advantage of the time that you're saving to be curious and think about what it means and add your own voice, add your value, understand what you're delivering before you send it over so you can have that human connection with your client.
I want to go back to a word that you used when you first kind of opened up this conversation about the hot take. You used the word order taker. And I hear that from a lot of people in customer success or post-sales type roles where they complain that they are getting relegated to order taker, right? How are you seeing that shift happening? And what would you recommend for a team that doesn't that wants to be more than just glorified customer service agents?
So when somebody says they're being relegated to an order taker, I see it as an excuse, a crutch, essentially. The only person that's relegating themselves to an order taker is the individual. And that is essentially, and I say this, so it's not to, you know, sometimes I've had to actually have this exact conversation with a team member in the past. And while their feeling is real, there's opportunity to change that. You got to think about, okay, how are you doing time management? You're feeling like an order taker because you have so much work that you have to get out that you're just pounding it out and answering the orders that are coming in. So you need to think about your entire, you know, essentially set boundaries for yourself. What's important? Where do I focus? How can I get out of this order taker mode? One of the big things that I say, you know, if you feel like you have too much work, a great way to manage it is ask customers questions when they ask for something. That actually buys you time. And while it's a benefit to you buying time, it will turn you out of order taker into more of that consultant. Because what you're going to end up finding out is, say, a customer asks, hey, I need this report. Can you get this over to me by the end of the day? Great, happy to get you the report, but can I have a little bit of more information on what it is you're looking for? Guess what? Now they have to take time to answer that question, and you have time to do something else instead of do that report. They come back, what you end up finding out is the report that they were looking for actually wasn't going to answer the question, and it's a lot easier for you to give them the answer outside of running the report. I mean,
Yeah,
simple solve right there.
I love that too. You were talking about, you know, if you just simply do what they're telling you without critically thinking about what they're asking for, right? You're gonna miss out on those opportunities to make your customer feel seen and heard, right? If all you're ever
Exactly.
doing is saying, okay, yes, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, but you're not asking additional questions. People love to feel like you're engaged and curious and connected to what they're doing. And it's as simple as just asking questions and showing genuine, authentic care for what your
That's right.
customer is saying.
That's exactly right.
But I love how you tied that back to like you opened it with critical thinking, right? And that's really what it comes down to for our customers. Our customers want, expect, demand for us to think critically about their project, their success, their implementation, whatever it is that we're working on.
They do. And I've also had some pushback of, well, I need to be the hero. I need to turn this information around quickly for them. Well, how does that make you a hero? What value does that really drive for them? What if you could answer the question they're looking to answer, type it up in a way that they can and offer up that they can literally copy and paste and use this as their own words for whatever. That's when you really become the hero. You're there helping them do their job better and faster.
Let me, this is maybe a hot take, I don't know. As you were saying that, I was thinking about, I have little kids, so I basically watch a bunch of Disney and Pixar movies. And I was
I
thinking
remember
about those days. I was thinking about the movie The Incredibles, right? They're all superheroes. But in the movie, they, in the process of saving the day, they wreck a bunch of stuff. And then basically all of the superheroes get like banned. You're not allowed to have superheroes anymore. I don't know that you get to define yourself as the hero. The customer gets to define if you're the hero. And if you don't understand what you're supposed to be saving, then you really aren't the hero.
That is a hot take. Look at you.
I
You're having the hot
know, flipping
take.
it back on you.
No, I like that. Who defines
Who gets
exactly?
to decide if I'm the hero or not? It's not me.
No, it's not you. The client does 100%.
When you're looking at teams, right? So we have a lot of conversations on this about podcast about on this podcast about teams, right? And the premise that, customer success is a team sport. That's an adage that we hear over and over again. Accepting that that premise is true, how do you actually get your team to start thinking critically, to stop just responding and reacting and start lifting their heads and looking at the world around them and having a critical eye towards what is the right thing to do for your customer?
That's a great question. So, I actually had an opportunity, this was years ago, to do this exact thing. I came into a role, of course, got added to all the distro lists, and I'm just watching just the emails pound through. It's clear client vendor relationship, and there's a clear distinction. And what I did is I got everybody on a call. And I was like, man, guys, I need your help. Everything is coming in fast and furious. Can you help break this down? What are processes? And it was interesting. I say interesting, it was also part of my plan. The team stepped back as they tried to communicate what was going on, what the process and plan was, and how things were working. Their eyes were opening, going, wait a second. What we're supposed to be doing and what we're doing really isn't connecting. And how do we connect that? And it's like, oh, the music was playing for me in the background. And I said, well, how about we divide up our communications into types of communications? And I'm going to raise my hand as an early outsider and say, there are some really strong skills across this team. Can we establish SMEs for different topics? And that's exactly what we ended up doing is we divided the team up into their various subject expertise. And then we talked about how we were going to do the intake process. And it was always every single question was going to come back with the question of why, right? Why? Help me understand what it is you're trying to achieve here. I want to make sure that I'm giving you the best information to achieve that. And what we did is for that first week, we after it was rolled out, we met again and we said, okay, because we're all on the distro list. What do we think's working? What do we think's not working? Does anybody see any opportunities? And it was, I mean, people were suggesting, hey, I saw when you got this email, this is how you handled it. I loved that. Great idea. Another person said, hey, I saw this one come across. I think this is an opportunity where you could have maybe pivoted the conversation. And because it was everybody's ideas together, there was no hard feelings. We were all trying to lift each other up. And so we ended up having in the weekly meetings became, and then they evolved, of course, and it was less about the process, but that's how it became our team sport.
Everything you're describing. So first of all, one of the things someone once told me is the best way to learn something is to try to teach it to someone else, right? Because it requires you to kind of go inside, introspect, understand, and then reiterate and regurgitate. But everything you talked about requires a pretty high degree of trust and like comfort with each other and psychological safety. Because if I don't trust you to have my best interests at heart, I'm not going to take your feedback on what I could have done better or differently on that message communication or outreach. So how do you do that?
100% fair. So that particular instance, that team had been together for a number of years. I was really the outsider, which was one of the reasons why it was so important to me to essentially lead them into the idea mm-hmm. so they weren't coming from me. And then that feedback, they were a family. So that was not a concern. But you're exactly right about needing that trust. And so for me, I'm all about team building. I'm a big fan of virtual lunches. If you're remote, happy hours, because what team doesn't have some remote? So we do regular virtual lunches and people will be like, oh, I have meetings. If we were in an office, there is no problem, you know, blocking out and sitting around or going out. So we're going to have virtual lunches. Treat this as if we're in an office. So we have virtual happy hours and the team takes turn for each happy hour, owning the theme. And this is where we get to learn about each other. And the themes, sometimes it's what was your favorite vacation? Two truths and a lie. There's two lies and a truth too. I remember I screwed that one. just different things where we got to learn about each other, understand backgrounds, especially like in a global environment. That was exciting to learn about other cultures. And that built that trust and that understanding. And you need to have that in order to do exactly what you're trying to do. So that's how I like to build my teams, to build that trust and that corroboration.
There's been I have perceived a swing since we all kind of were forced to get remote. And then now some of us are kind of swinging back. I noticed that all of my Zoom calls became so tactical, right? You get on the call, there's an agenda, you stick to it. There's no like social time, right? No water cooler. Mm-hmm. And as someone who I don't think I've ever really met any of my customers in person, right? I'm in Iowa. All of my clients are Midwest or are West Coast and East Coast. So I've literally never met them. And I've managed to build a relationship with them virtually, but it was like really difficult and I feel like twice as hard. How can you be intentional in a virtual environment building a relationship with a person you may never physically meet, whether a teammate or a customer?
That is a great question. And so I sit in Kansas.
So you feel me.
I do. Sitting in the middle of nowhere here. And, you know, especially too with COVID and budgets are being constrained because people are trying to do more with less. So, hey, we have video calls. No need to travel. You have to force water cooler talk. And I always do I shouldn't say always, but frequently I'll do the, forgive me, I have to share this thing that I did or am doing. And when you do that, it breaks the ice. And then people ask questions and they're all, oh, I've done that before. Oh, you have? Tell me about that. You have to be very, very intentional about it to force water cooler talk. And I know some people aren't comfortable with it. And you have to practice and make it, you know, just part of who you are. People know when you get on the call, you're going to probably share something cool or ask about something. If I know a lady is considers herself a fashionista, hey, is that a new blouse you're wearing? Tell me about that. Look for cues behind them. I do all of those things to be very intentional to build that relationship beyond that kind of tactical customer client relationship.
Right. We're here to do something.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
yeah.
you made the point though, like it has to be intentional, but I think you have to communicate with your team, right? If someone doesn't see the point in the quote unquote water cooler talk and the, this meeting could have been an email, you're wasting my time, I don't have time for this, right? But if there's mm-hmm. a reason to have these conversations, to build these relationships, to keep it human, even yep. when we're behind cameras and computer screens, I really think that that's something that people have to understand is not just something we're doing for fun, but it's because it's an important business objective too.
It is. I love the keeping it human. So one of the things too, I like to do with all my key stakeholders, and depending on who owns the relationship with that key stakeholder, have regular touch bases that are specific to them and not necessarily the engagement that we have as a client. So our goal, let's go back to the hero talk. My goal is to make you a hero. How do I do that? What's important to you? And it goes back to who owns that? The client owns that, right? So by having those conversations one-on-one, you get to understand the client better. Again, we come back as a team internally and we share that information out. So we learn about the individual stakeholders, and it helps also drive those intentional kind of water cooler topics too in various meetings. That is a great point though that
You
you
made
brought
a
up.
comment earlier about we're all being asked to do more with less. And everything we're kind of talking about is fairly hands-on, like high touch relationship building. What if I want to do this, but I literally just don't have time today? I have 100 accounts that I am responsible to know everything about.
That's where I say agentic AI is going to be your best friend. You've got to figure out how to automate the busy work so you can spend time on the important pieces, the critical thinking, the relationship building. Those two things will drive your success unlike nothing else. Busy work, anybody can do busy work. So let's put the AI agents to work on that.
I love that. Tell us a little bit more about you. So we've talked a lot about your experience and everything that you're working on now, but let's kind of go back to the beginning. We've been really hot on the superhero conversation right now. So in that vein, tell us your radioactive spider. Tell us your dipped in radioactive. It's always radioactive, but tell us your origin story. Where do you come from?
So I will say my story is somewhat, I would consider, unconventional. And I break this, or I say this because I always get asked when somebody, goes to my LinkedIn profile. But my degree is in chemistry. And believe it or not, my intent was actually to go into marketing. I won't go down that whole spiel. People are like, how do chemistry and marketing relate? And I said, actually, I use my degree every single day. It kind of instilled that foundational approach for me to kind of observe, analyze, be a critical thinker, form a hypothesis, test and learn and optimize, right? So everything I do every day, really, I learned how to perfect while I was in school. So my career path took me client side first, and I worked primarily in startups and high growth companies. So I had to learn how to be very versatile, adapt quickly. I mean, do more with less. Resources are limited, expectations are really high. So you learn how to be resourceful really quickly. I will say the pivotal moment in my career actually happened in a boardroom, though. So I was leading the marketing for a high growth startup owned by a venture capital firm. We hadn't been hitting our numbers for a couple quarters in a row. Trends weren't showing a turnaround. And I was summoned from my seat in Kansas to head to New York and sit in a boardroom. And it was myself and the CFO came alongside me so that he could help with the backup numbers and financials. Anyway, I just found myself sitting in that boardroom. I was being hammered with questions. I don't remember all the details, but I remember coming prepared to answer the why and kind of the recommendations on how I think we should pivot and what my hypothesis was and forecast and so forth. No one had prepared me for that level of scrutiny. I mean, I don't know how anybody can really be prepared for that experience. But that's when that specific experience said to me, there are so many really talented marketers out there who are great at execution, but maybe struggle at the managing up aspect. And that's when I was like, I want to go agency side. I want to share my knowledge and my experience to help other marketers in these pivotal moments, kind of equip them with the tools and the understanding and the approach to be able to communicate effectively and manage up and not let it, own that situation. Don't let it turn into a negative situation, right? So, rest of the thing is history.
Yeah, it's really something about startups that forge you. because I've also lived in startups my whole life. And it is not for the faint of heart, for
No,
sure.
it is not. Lots of late nights, lots of sleepless nights,
Lots
lots
of
of learning how to
confusing
do
looks from your
things.
friends and family as to why you're working at a startup when you could make money elsewhere.
Yeah, there's that as well. Yeah.
So, Shelby, thinking of all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet or that you follow or that you listen to, who else should we be talking to? Who is leading the charge in changing the way we think about our customers?
So, one individual that comes to mind now, he doesn't post a lot. He doesn't have a podcast. He's somebody that I worked with, but I would say follow him on LinkedIn because when he does post, it's meaningful. And his name is Sean Wilkins. He is an expert in life cycle marketing. He and I worked together at a MarTech company. He was, he led the strategy team. Of course, I was sitting on CS. And I learned so much from him because not only is he passionate about life cycle marketing, he understands the relationship with the customer and your customer success team. And he's just brilliant. And if you ever have a chance to sit in a room, you'll be in awe and you'll know very quickly how he feels about you, whether or not you're brilliant or
I love it.
not. Yeah. But I would say follow him on LinkedIn. He doesn't post a lot, but when he does, I
It's
everything is
gold.
valuable.
Yeah, I love that. And Shelby, if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to chat about your experiences or pick your brain, where can they find you online?
LinkedIn. I mean, that's where I am. So look me up, Shelby Garlock. I have the vanity URL. There's no numbers or anything associated with it. So,
I
yeah,
have
hit
one
me
of
up.
those too. I'm actually to this day shocked that I got it.
I know.
I don't
Me
have my
too.
Instagram, but I do have my LinkedIn. So,
Congrats.
well, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was a really great conversation.
Thank you, Alyssa. Appreciate it. Cheers.